I said, it must be the sixth floor. And I hit it and went to the sixth floor. And a lady stepped on. And I said, ma'am, do you know where the heart, the cardiac section is? She said, no, I think, and so forth. And so I went back down to the third floor. And finally, I got my mind. I said, there's only one floor left. And went back to the second floor, and there was everybody there. To show you how your mind operates like that. I couldn't seem to walk without stumbling. You just walk, and then your feet just kicks the rug. And it's a weird feeling. I became afraid of everything. I was totally terrified to go home. Just totally terrified of it. I was afraid to go to sleep. I was afraid to wake up. I was afraid to think about the future. Anything you mentioned, I was absolutely terrified of. If you say, Lowell, will you be able to preach again? Just fear would invade me. Will you ever get married again? Just fear would invade me. Will you not get married? Fear would invade me. Just totally afraid. Fear. It just goes over you until you can't believe it. And then one person says, I hurt so differently. Now, the way you hurt and the way you feel is totally helpless. Helpless, hopeless, useless, and naked are my descriptions. And that's it. Totally helpless, totally hopeless. Now, you've never really had a feeling. I've never appreciated hell until she died. Until I experienced what hopelessness feels like. And then I said, is that what hell feels like? And friend, if there was no darkness in hell, if hell was lit with the brightest lights and you were eating the finest food in an air-conditioned room and you had to spend eternity with the feeling of hopelessness, I can't tell you what that feeling feels like. You feel useless to everybody. You feel naked. You don't feel like you have your clothes off. You just feel like that everybody can look through you and see everything about you, and there's nothing good. You're disappointed when people try to help you and encourage you. They'd come to me and they'd say, you're strong, Lowell, and you'll make it fine. They say, time will heal the pain. You'll be a good example. It's all for the best. You know, she had diabetes, and so she would saved her from suffering. And so you feel terribly disappointed. You feel good that friends come and hug you, and we'll talk about that tomorrow night. And then you have a feeling of nobody cares. Make a difference who it is. Even the people that's there in the middle of the night, nobody cares. The reason that you feel that way is because all of a sudden you realize that there's nobody in this world that cares about you more than anybody. Now, you may have to chew on that one, take it home, and think about it, but that's an intelligent statement. That's what gives you and your wife a relationship that you don't have with anybody else. If you have your wife here tonight, she cares more about you than she cares about anybody else in this world. And friend, when a man and a woman would come and his wife would put her arms around me, and hundreds of them did, and hug me and squeeze me and say, Lowell, I love you, I knew she cared more about her husband than she cared about me. And when he shook my hand and said, old buddy, I'll do anything for you, I knew he loved his wife more than he loved me. And all of a sudden, I knew I stood in a world where not a single person loved me more than they loved anybody else. And that's a feeling that you have to experience. These are feelings that you have that you think you're going crazy. But if you know that you have them, you're going to have them, but at least you'll know you're not going crazy. And then everything was too burdensome. It's too much. I had to do it, but I can't. I couldn't make phone calls. To make a phone call just seemed absolutely unbearable. The burden is too great. And so I tried to call. I tried to call my mother-in-law. And do you know I couldn't ring a telephone? And I stood there and I had the number and I punched those buttons and I'd hit the wrong ones. And I don't know how many times I tried until finally I could not ring her number. And my kids had to come over and say, Dad, let us do it. And they had to ring the number. I could not ring a telephone number that night. It's hard to talk. You couldn't eat. You felt like that you couldn't go to the funeral home and pick out the casket and make arrangements that you just, if you could die, everything would be fine. But the problem is you couldn't die. You didn't want to go to the graveside. I couldn't walk across the room sometimes without sitting down. I'd go to the living room to start to go to the bedroom, and I'd have to stop and sit down in the kitchen because I just could not go any farther. And I've always been a man of great energy from morning to night. You want to talk to her so badly that you can't, it's just totally unbelievable. You cry suddenly, and little things make you cry. Just little things, and then you realize that a lot of things are going to make you cry. I well remember that one little thing, I'll just tell you, because every one of you have these silly little things in your life. My wife and I both like heels of bread. And so anytime we would have it, especially homemade bread, well, I'd come in and say, oh boy, I get the heel. And she'd say, no, I get the heel. So we'd have a fight over who got the heel. And then when we sat down to dinner, she always made sure I got the heel, see? And then I'd butter it, and then I'd give it to her. No, you're going to eat it. No, you eat it. And then we'd always cut it, and both of us eat the heel. So we always had these little love fights over who gets to eat the heel. And my kids knew that I love the heel, and so people have brought us in all of this. They brought in some homemade bread. We sat down, and my boy said, Dad, here's a heel. You see, it's even hitting me now. And it broke me down. Just totally devastate you. I couldn't eat it. And even yet, 18 months later, I'm having a good time. I'm living a happy life. But a silly little thing like that will make a grown man break down before 200 people. See? And so get ready for those things because they're going to happen. Now again, you're going to find that things that you were afraid of turned out to be some of the best things, and things you thought you could do weren't. Viewing the body while you're in this shock was a very comforting thing. The friends coming and hugging you is so comfortable. We'll talk about it tomorrow night. The funeral was a comfortable thing. I didn't think I'd live through it, but it was comfortable. The graveside service, I even tried to talk my children out of it. I told them, I can't go through that. I'm glad I did. It was very comfortable. The day after the funeral, I couldn't open some bills. Dr. Bills came. A friend was there. I could not open the envelope. I had the strength. I could not do it because I knew I would see a bill in there about her. I gave it to him and said, take care of it. When you go to Sunday services and you hear those songs that she sang, it's overwhelming with pain. You think about her every second. And when I say every second, I mean every tenth of a second. That's what I'm talking about. I don't mean that there's 1/100th of a second that she's not on your mind. And tomorrow night, I'll tell you an interesting thing about that. You hurt so badly that you just hyperventilate, that you just can't breathe. And then you want to feel guilty. Now, if you and your wife are having troubles, I urge you to go home tonight and make it right. Because one day, one of you is going to lose the other. And you don't know what pain is until you live with a guilty conscience. Now, my wife and I was fortunate enough to have a very beautiful marriage. We never had an argument in all of our life. We had disagreements, but not an argument. She'd say, I think you need to do this, and I know, or something like this, but we never argued. And I never had anything to be guilty about. And I began to search. What can I be guilty about? And I looked and I looked and I looked, trying to be guilty about something. I should have fixed up her house better. No, I just went through the whole thing last year, and on I'd go. And you know what? One night I was sitting in the living room, and I was thinking about that, and it hit me. That's it. I found something. You know what it was? A practical joke I played on her one time. I played a joke on her, and I thought, I shouldn't have done that to her. See how I mistreated her? See what a lousy husband I was? And I began then to really just cut myself up until I, wait a minute, hold it. That's the reason she liked you. I mean, she wouldn't have liked you if you'd have been an old sourpuss, you know. I was a practical joker when she married me, and that was something that attracted me to her. And I can't be guilty about that. And so I just share that with you to show you. If you've got something to be guilty about, you better not go to bed tonight until you get it straightened out. Because you've got enough torment to go through without living with guilt. And oh, that guilt, it would be a terrible thing. I was so lost. Do you know how long it takes you to think about remarriage? You really know? I want to to share everything with you. I want you to ask any questions you want to ask. I don't care what questions you ask. I'll share and I'll tell you the truth. You know how long it took me to think about whether I would ever remarry or not? That nurse came out and says, "I'm sorry, we lost her." And I thought, oh no, will I ever remarry? Just like that. Then do you know what my next thought was? You filthy-minded man. You dirty, rotten, low-down scum of the earth. Having that thought to go through your mind within 2 seconds after they said she's dead, and how terrible I felt. And then I thought, well, I can't live without her. I must get married. No, I can't. Yeah, I will. No, won't. Can't. No, oh, wow. And bing! It just rips you apart. Now get ready. Those things are going to hit you. You see? Those things are going to hit you. If I have time tomorrow, I'll tell you some more about those kind of thoughts. You sat there, you just feel like you're floating off. Your values totally change. I lost every bit of interest in anything physical. It didn't make any difference what it was, the house, the furniture, whatever it was, everything. I lost total interest of anything physical. To show you how I felt, I went home 3 or 4 days after she had died from the office. I had a pear tree out there, and I thought, what am I going to do? Well, I'll go out and I'll prune the pear tree. I hate those pear trees. I hate to prune them. I didn't want to go in the house. I had to do something. And so I went out and got a brand new saw. Went out, got my gloves, wool gloves, and it was in the winter. Climbed up in a tree and was leaning over, and the limb was short, and so I was sawing. And that saw slipped out and went into my finger. Went right through my glove, went into my finger, and ouch! You know, forget it. Who cares? You know, I bet I hurt that thing. I don't care if it's hurt or not. Now, I'm not exaggerating. I'm not making this up. I didn't care whether the finger was off or not. I knew I'd gone in pretty badly. Well, who cares? I don't even want to be here. I want to die. I don't care whether I have that thing or not. It did hurt. So I went ahead and I trimmed that whole tree. And I carried all the branches out. Went in the house, took it off, and I'd gone way down into the bone. But I didn't care. Now that's hard for you to believe. I know that. And you'll probably go home tonight and say, Lowell exaggerates, doesn't he? I'm telling you, that is the way you feel. Grief is a real thing. That's the terrible thing about it. Now then you get into the second stage, and we're going to wrap it up here pretty quickly. But then that's the numbness that you go through. You get into the second stage, and then here's what you find. And we're going to talk about this second stage more tomorrow night. And that is that the shock stage can last from a few days to a few weeks to a few months. And then it fades out into what is called the suffering stage. Now, you really don't know when you go out of one into the other. It's kind of like a vapor. You just feel like there's a vapor and there's a cloud and you can't get out of it. No way. And sometimes it'll start to lift a little bit and then it'll just clamp right down on you. And then it'll lift a little bit and then just clamp right down on you again. But then what happens is, the truth is, that during the shock stage, you're numb. You hurt ever so badly. Words cannot describe the hurt, but it's a different hurt than you've ever experienced. It is lost, helpless, hopeless, stupor. You couldn't endure it if it were not for the stupor and numbness. Thank God, everybody goes into shock. You couldn't live through it if you didn't. Now, as you slowly come out of this numb stupor, then the pain begins to increase. Now, the unusual thing about it is, and the reason I'm glad we're talking about this, is that everybody comes to the funeral, and everybody comes and brings food the first 2 or 3 days. Then after the funeral, everybody goes away and goes back to their work, and now then, go ahead and make something out of your life. And right then is when you start hurting. That's when you need the friends. That's when the pain starts coming in. And then there is this intense pain that comes. It's just so intense that we'll talk about tomorrow night again that you can't believe it. Now, this is where your friend needs you. This is the time of when you need to go and you need to do something. That's tomorrow night. Grief from a friend's viewpoint. Now, you won't know what to do until you know how you feel at that particular time. So tomorrow night, we're going to talk about that. Now, let's go to the third and the last, and that is the healing or the recovery stage. You will recover. The Bible teaches you will. Now, I want to emphasize that because for the first year, you will be absolutely guaranteed in your mind you will never recover. I looked at other people and I knew they had. I looked at Homer Haley and Roy Cogdell and I called them. And I asked them a dumb question, but it was serious to me. I said, Homer, can you really get married and love another woman as much as you loved your first wife? I'll never forget old Homer. You know how he talks. Yeah, Lord, yeah. You know, yeah, you can. Why, yeah, he said, you know, said I've been married to my second wife now. Let's see. I've married my first wife for 32 years. How long was you married, Lowell? I said, 32 years. Is that right? Yeah, he said, I've been married to this woman now for, it's been 32 years. He said, I've been married to her. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He said, you love her? I said, sure, you love her. He said, now, there's not a day that I don't think about my first wife. And he said, we talk about her every day. He said, she's kind of like, you know, she's around here. But said, no, there's no pain. I said, really? You can really do that? I just couldn't believe it. Oh, yeah. You know, you can do that. Okay, you will recover. Let me read you some Bible passages. I never looked at these Bible passages before this. But look, see if you've noticed them. Let's take Bathsheba. What do you know about Bathsheba? Oh, we know about her orneriness, don't we? But when the wife of Uriah heard that Uriah, her husband, was dead, she made lamentation for her husband. She did all that we're talking about. And when the morning was past, did you ever notice that? Now, the reason I noticed that is that's the stage I'm in right now. See, that's the reason I can meet you back at the door tonight and I can laugh and I can joke, because my mourning is past. It's not all the way over, but I'm well into it so I can live a happy life. Listen to King David. And King David longed to go into Absalom, for he was comforted concerning Amnon, seeing he was dead. Ever thought about that passage before? He wanted to go and was worried about his boy that was alive because he was comforted about the boy that was dead. He had wrestled with that problem and he had found comfort. The Bible teaches you'll heal. God's command teaches that. What did he tell a young widow to do? I desire therefore that the young widows marry, bear children, rule the household. For the first year you're going to say that's absolutely impossible. But God knows it's not. And so God says that's what I expect you to do. Yeah, you will heal. Remember that from the first day. Listen to this in Psalms 30 and verse 6. David says, weeping may tarry for the night, but joy cometh in the morning. Thou hast turned my mourning into dancing. Good days will come again. Isaiah 40:31 says, but they that wait for Jehovah shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. God promises us, wait on him, take care of your problems, put your faith in him, it'll turn out all right. Now the experiences of mankind also teach it. I know that we'll heal because everybody does. All who grieve properly do heal to live and find happiness again. You'll never forget your loved one, but you'll heal and remember them with joy and not with pain. Studies show that the average time to return to a happy life is 2 years. It generally takes 5 years for a full recovery, so you can say that you are as happy as you were before the death. I quote from a letter that I wrote. I wrote a young lady when she was wondering about time. And I said, time is a great healer, as you said, but it is not time alone. Time itself is neutral. Time itself is neither good or bad. It is how you use your time that produces either good or bad results. Time merely gives us the opportunity to either heal properly or heal improperly. One cannot do it without time. Therefore, time is very important. Time allows us to improve, and time gives us a system of measurement to see how we are improving. Those who use their time to talk and express themselves usually improve faster than those who don't. However, this is not to say that one has to talk. It merely helps to talk. Time gives us the opportunity to accept the death as a reality. It gives us the opportunity to become acquainted, accustomed to living without the presence of the one who died. It gives us the opportunity to forget the pain we experienced when we lost our loved one. It gives us opportunity to examine our values and our future and our goals. It gives us the opportunity to wrestle with bitterness and loneliness and hopelessness and helplessness. These are things we must face, fight, and conquer. It gives us time to develop either a negative or positive outlook at life in the future. This outlook will depend on how we've dealt with other opportunities that we've listed. But time is the tool that provides this opportunity. We can use this time to measure our progress. Everyone works on a different time schedule, but most people come within a certain guideline if they're healing properly. Number one, it takes about 2 months to begin to feel any difference. The pain is so intense that life is just a blur. Two, in 4 months, most people notice a difference, but it's not a big one. It is small, but it is so exciting to the one experiencing it because at this time, one feels they will never improve. Any comfort is noticed and appreciated. Three, in 6 months, most people begin to notice a big difference because they have either accepted the death or are at least beginning to accept it. In my case, I began to accept it in 6 months. It was probably 9 or 10 months before I could feel that I had accepted the fact. This is hard for someone who's not experienced it to understand. I thought that I had accepted it in 4 months. Now I know that I hadn't even begun to start to accepting it. When one really accepts it, that's when the rapid improvement actually begins. Four. 1 year is the magic number. It's the greatest thing that can happen. To pass that goalpost is a wonderful feeling. That first anniversary date brings back old memories. It is the first thing that you have to experience for the first, it's the last thing you have to experience for the first time. Tomorrow night I'll talk about that. That's a very intelligent statement if you don't understand it. It said, for first things really hurt, and that first anniversary does hurt. After it's over, one feels a sigh of relief, a burden off your shoulders. It makes it easier to cut with the past and look forward to the future. I experienced this 3 weeks ago. I wrote that 6 months ago. I can't tell you how much I've improved in the last 3 weeks. What a glorious 3 weeks. I just wrote another person and attempted to give them some comfort by telling them how I now feel. What I said was as follows. Now here's what I could write after the first year. I wrote the other and said, I well remember when I was at the same stage in grief where you are now, that it would make me so mad to read or a statement like I just made in the last sentence. I didn't think that I could ever recover in such a matter. I thought that others might, but I couldn't because I love my wife so much. I am sure that you feel the same way, for I can tell that you were deeply in love with him. As I said, I would get angry to read such statements, but that day has come. I really can see that I am well on the way to a happy life. Number one, I never in my fondest dreams thought that I would be happy at the end of a year, like the surveys indicate, but I am. Two, I never in my fondest dreams thought that I would be able to think of her without pain. But I do. I never in my fondest dreams thought that I could ever look forward to marrying again, but now I feel like I will. I never in my fondest dreams thought that I would be able to spend minutes or even hours without thinking of her, but I do. I am sure that at the stage you're in, that you don't even have 2 seconds in a row where you're not thinking about your loss. That is normal, and that is what I did. And I assure you that it is so comforting to be able to spend an hour without it on your mind. They tell me that it will grow into days, but that is something that's hard to believe at my stage. I know it will happen, but it's hard to believe. Five, I never in my fondest dreams thought that I would ever be able to look forward to a new life that looks exciting and happy, but I am now experiencing that. I'm relating these things because they're things I didn't think possible when I was at your stage of grief. I thought them totally impossible, but now I'm experiencing them. I know that with the attitude that you have displayed, that you will experience them also. And so then we end by me saying thanks be to God that has made you and me so that we can endure pain, heal from grief, and come forth a better individual. 1 week before Doris died, we were talking about death, and she assured me that if she died first, that she wanted me to remarry. When I told her that I knew of no one that I could ever think about marrying, she even named the lady that I'm now dating, and that's not the point that I want to make. She made another statement that I want to use at the conclusion of this lesson. With wisdom beyond her years, she knew we all take things for granted, and she knew that only in death do we learn certain things and become better people. She said, when you get married again, you will appreciate your next wife more than you've appreciated me, because then you will know what you have. I can't tell you how true that is, and the wisdom of that blessed woman had. Our time is up. There are hundreds of things that I wish I could tell you. Tomorrow night will be a lesson somewhat like this one, of where I'll go into that suffering stage, that painful stage, that intense stage that you go through, and some of the things that you're going to have. And I do hope that you'll come back at that time. But at this time, should there be one in this audience that is without the Lord, or if you have obeyed the gospel but you know that you've gone astray, If you need to be washed in the precious blood of the Son of God, we'll give you that opportunity as we stand and as we sing this song.